This is Ben Smith. I'm a photographer, and this is my podcast, A Small Voice, Conversations with Photographers. Thanks for listening. Hey people, Ben here. This is A Small Voice, Conversations with Photographers. And it's very nice to have you join me. I've tried to record this intro about four times now, so I think if there are any more mistakes, they'll just have to stay in. Hope you're all doing all right. It's going to be a crazy week. We've got Photo London here in London, funnily enough, Photo London being in London. And I'll get down there the day this goes out, which is Wednesday, of course. That's tomorrow, or today, if you're listening on Wednesday. And I'll be down there, I don't know, as usual, probably 3 days in a row. It doesn't start properly until Thursday, but the preview day, the VIP day, of course, is Wednesday. That's today if you're listening. Oh, God, I can't do this time shift thing. I just watched an entire series of Russian Doll on Netflix. If any of you got into that in the first season, that's season two of that. And there's some crazy time shift stuff going on. Anyway, I digress. If you are down there, hope to see you. Come say hi. If you see me ligging about with a microphone in my hand, I will be gathering material for a forthcoming Photo London 2022 special, which will be on this podcast very soon. All for free, of course. If you would like to support the ongoing production of this podcast, please do go to pod.fan, find it on there, and sign up as a member. It's only £5 a month. That's two cups of coffee, and that's two reasonably priced cups of coffee at that, for quite a lot of awesome content, although I do say it myself. And on top of that, you get special bonus member-only content for that £5 a month. So anyway, the members out there will already know that it's good value. Members got special exclusive section of this Chico review special. I gave them something exclusive last week, and I'm thinking and working on ways for the near future to bring even better and more extensive bonus content for members, so it's even more incentive to sign up for £5 a month, because if I can give you even more, then I'll encourage more of you to sign up, and then that will change everything. So let's hope that that will happen, and I'm working on that as we speak. This episode of A Small Voice Podcast is, of course, sponsored by the Charcoal Book Club, who are also responsible for organising Chico Hot Springs Portfolio Review. And I'm not going to read the copy again because you've heard it a million times, but the Charcoal Book Club is a members-only photo book club which you can sign up for, and they will send you a lovely spanking new photo book curated and picked by them by hand every month. You won't know what you're getting necessarily until you check out what's coming, but you can be pretty sure to like it because they want to make sure that they're giving you the best possible photography books. And if you already have that book, you can, of course, apply to switch it out and they'll give you something different. There's all kinds of perks and additional incentives for being a member. There's free shipping if you're in the UK, Canada, or the USA, of course. And if you go to charcoalbookclub.com, you can very soon see the list of previous books of the month, previous books that have dropped through my letterbox as someone who's lucky enough to be a member. And you too can join up at charcoalbookclub.com and get 12 spanking new, extremely high quality photo books come through to your door every year. So this, of course, is part two of the Chico Hot Springs Portfolio Review 2022 special. I hope you do enjoy this one, as I hope you did enjoy the last one. Dodgy guitar playing and all. It's just, you know, something else for you. I thought it'd be nice to put a bit of music in. What can I say? But if you do want to check out any of the attendees featured in this week's episode, please, as usual, go to the show notes at bensmithphoto.com/a small voice and have a look there. All the links for everyone featured this week are there as they were for last week. Please enjoy part two of the two-part Chico review special.
It's
So here we are again. It's Friday already. Week's going really quick. Yesterday was a day off for everyone because it's important that people get a chance to kind of decompress. It's a pretty intense experience having like 5 hours of reviews a day, and for both attendees and reviewers. So the whole point of taking Thursday off is it's a kind of a reset in the middle of the week there. So 2 days of reviews, then the day off, and then 2 more days of reviews. That's basically how it goes. I had a little chance to go into Livingston yesterday, have a little look around. Great place. Doesn't take long because there's not much there because it's small, but it's small but perfectly formed. And yeah, I enjoyed that. It was a beautiful day again. So I also got a chat in the can. I might as well just tell you now who I've talked to. Now, there's no point in being guarded about it. I talked to Brian Schutmatt. So there's a proper full podcast chat coming with Brian at some point soon. The other person I spoke to who I haven't mentioned is Jonathan Levitt. And of course, those of you who remember the 29 episode will remember, or possibly will be aware of, the fact that John said the most contentious thing that anyone's ever said, I think, on the podcast in 170 episodes. And for those of you who've heard that episode, you might remember. If you haven't listened to it, you should. But I brought my book dummy, and the first thing John said was, this would be better if you'd shot it on film. And I've had so many comments about that comment over the last 3 years. People are baffled by it. They didn't really get the reason why he might say something like that. It's really all about the idea that there's some kind of inherent difference between film and digital. I don't think there's any aesthetic. Well, maybe there's an... Oh, here we go, you see. It starts to get complicated, doesn't it? Is there a difference in terms of the superficial kind of... kind of surface of what the image looks like? Anyway, that the point is, I'm rambling already because I always find it difficult. I finally got a chance to get John to expand on that comment and perhaps explain why he said it and what he meant by it. So that is to come. If you've been waiting 3 years to hear the follow-up to that comment, you will finally get it. To be honest, you'll probably be disappointed because I don't know if I really went into it in enough depth. It was quite a short interaction in a way, and but nevertheless an interesting one. So anyway, I'm here again to do a bunch more of these little interviews with the attendees. The other thing I want to mention is that there is one other thing happening this year, which is a series of alumni workshops. So there are people who have come back from previous years to do some particular workshops. A couple of people I remember from 2019 who are back, and there's two people in particular who are here. Well, John is one of those people, and a couple of other people who are here who are particularly interesting. Brad Zeller is here, and he's a writer, and you can look Brad up. He has been many years in journalism, and is closely involved with photography, writing about photography and using photography himself. He's collaborated extensively with Alex Soth, and Brad is here to run a writing workshop essentially with some of the alumni. So that's really interesting. Brad did a presentation this morning whereby he read a fairly extended piece about himself essentially, which I think went down incredibly well, and is fascinating bloke. So really interesting that they're bringing a sort of writing element into this. No one's quite sure, you know, how it's all going to pan out. It's the first time, so there's inevitably there is an element of experimentation to it. But that's interesting. And I, as a writer myself, I suppose I would call myself, it was really interesting to listen to Brad Reed. And the other person who's here is Sergio Patel. Sergio is a photographer himself, but also a master printer, and someone who has printed for an incredible roster of extraordinary photographers, and Mark Steinmetz among them, people like that. And Sergio is running a kind of printing workshop as well for some of the alumni. So people who are really into that, there's a little darkroom in Livingston, which is about a half-hour drive away. And so they've sort of commandeered the place for the period of the review, and they're in there, you know, up to their eyeballs in Fixer or whatever. I don't know. It's been a long time since I was in a darkroom, to be honest, but I totally loved it when I was, I'll tell you that much. Though my printing has always sucked. and really, really bad, and I could have done with someone like Sergio as a kind of guide. But those people who are signed up to do that, I'm sure are really enjoying that. So those are a couple of the other people who are here. I've already name checked the reviewers, but I wanted to also name check those people. So anyway, I will continue to speak to some of the attendees today and see what they've brought along, and find out a little bit more about who they are.
My name's Tori Brown, and I'm from Indiana, living between Indianapolis and southern Indiana, between Evansville and Vincennes. So I am currently in my undergrad. I have one class left, and I just got into grad school, actually. So I'll be attending Yale in the fall, and I currently have a day job as a cashier so that I don't have to think about my job whenever I leave it, and I just started working full-time there. I have two bodies of work, navigating between Indianapolis and my hometown in southern Indiana. This whole situation, having these reviews, has revealed the connections between the two that I thought they were totally separate projects. And it's interesting because people have pointed out that my environments are better in one and my portraits are better in the other. And I'm trying to figure out how to merge those two.
Oh, cool. So that's been a bit of a revelation in itself. So you've basically had what you thought to be two separate projects. And then they've suggested that maybe this is one thing.
Yeah. So whenever I'm in Indianapolis, it feels like more of an assignment that I've given myself. Like maybe a magazine has reached out to me to cover this place, but I've done that to myself. And then whenever I go home, I get to experiment a lot more and come up with new ideas and fresh ways of thinking that I kind of skip over whenever I'm in Indianapolis. But it's fascinating because whenever I'm in Indy, I have a lot more time to make a lot more work. And maybe that's where the disconnect is, where I'm just staring at all this work all the time, and I'm not actually questioning what I'm doing. But whenever I'm at home, I'm not thinking about the place all the time. I'm not thinking about the images, and I'm very critical about what I want to photograph and sparing with my time.
My name is Todd Rigos. I am a photographer from Athens, Greece, and I'm doing documentary photography, mainly with the refugees around the world. So the project is called Adrift, and it's about a boy, a 19-year-old Afghan boy I met in Moria refugee camp. Since day one, he became a friend, a translator, and a guide. And he helped me actually talk with Afghan families, Syrian families, and everything in between.
As you're flicking through them now, and we're getting towards the end, it becomes apparent that there was some kind of tragedy unfolded. Can you just explain briefly what happened to him?
Yes, Amir was diagnosed with with a heart problem. Eventually, he was taken with his family in the capital of Greece, in Athens. And in a try to make a documentary about the family and the problem, and in order to put Amir on a list for a heart transplant, many things went sideways. I actually realized that the NGO that was helping the family was actually treating them with no dignity at all. And I had to take initiation and help the family by myself. So after taking Amir to a hospital, to a friendly doctor I had, I found the solution of his problem, and he could have a quality life for a few years before making a transplant. But eventually, the NGO never picked up the phone, so I can tell them. And tragically, one day, and after not giving the heart medicine to Amir for 2 weeks, Amir passed away in his own house. My plans on either way on making a photo book out of these stories is to create action through awareness. It's to tell to people on this earth, the audience, that we are all refugees, no matter the ethnicity. We are all humans, and we want everybody to be treated the same. So, you know, through, because I do this project with my mind like human first, photographer after. I just want to show the truth to the world, because in 2022, very sadly, we see governments hiding the truth. And that's the most sad thing that can happen to the world.
My name is Dina Eber, and I'm from Toledo, Ohio. Actually, that's where I live. It's not really where I'm from. I grew up in Philadelphia, so I'm not a nice Midwesterner. I'm actually pretty harsh sometimes. So I don't want to give away my age too much, but my first camera was a gift from I inherited his old Yashica, his 35mm film camera, and it was in the 70s, and it was then when I enrolled in a community art center, you know, photography class, and I went into the dark room then, so I started on film, and I really haven't left photography since, so it's been a long time.
Okay. Great. All right, we get a sense of it. Tell me about this specific project that you've brought to show people here.
This is called Becoming Alex, and there's actually two stories in it. It's my story as a parent supporting and also mourning and falling back in love with somebody who's transitioning from Margaret to Alex. This is my daughter, and we've talked about the name daughter. They are still my daughter, and they agree with that. They're transitioning from a female identity to a non-binary identity, and it's about my... It's a grieving and mourning process of Margaret, but then it's also the falling in love with and learning who Alex is. And it's also the same story for Alex, because Alex is figuring out who Alex is too. So, yeah.
Oh, wow, that's a fascinating dynamic. So how old is Alex?
Alex is currently 22. When they announced it, they were 20. And that's an interesting question, because part of what I was looking into in this project is looking back, looking for evidence of if this was something that was sooner or not. And in some people, it manifests at age two. But I think for my Alex, it's something that I saw a change around puberty. They didn't know what it was. And now in hindsight, I understand better what it was.
This is a profoundly personal project for you. And how does Alex feel about the fact of you doing it?
I love that question. Because, when Alex first announced this, I asked them if they wanted to do a project. And they were all in. All in. They want to be on stage. They want everybody to hear their story. Since then, I've rightfully so had people ask me about agency. And it's a great question. So what I did all the way through the project was included Alex. Alex collaborated. But to be sure, when I first put together a dummy of this book, I asked Alex if it was okay if I recorded their reactions. And I did. They took an hour going through the book. But I transcribed it. It's a 5-minute read. And what comes out of that read is the love and the support from both of us and our relationship, and also pretty much how we went back and forth and worked through the book together. And it's a QR code on the back of the book.
Okay. I'm Hunter Lacey, and I'm from Dallas, Texas, and that's where I live currently. So I'm actually in grad school at George Washington in DC, but doing my thesis remotely from Dallas, so studying photojournalism there. And I freelance as well, and then I work at a dark room in Dallas. So this project kind of came out as a response to moving away. So the project is about Texas and my family, and it's definitely still in process. So the reviews have been really helpful, just helping me to articulate and understand meaning behind it. So the overarching theme that I've sort of found through this week of just talking about the work and getting feedback is that the story is really about aging. So looking back at my childhood, my siblings and my cousins and my niece are in this, and places around Dallas near where I grew up, it's the landscapes that I've created are sort of, they're imaginary almost. They're like a created universe, because my childhood was really fun and joyful, and I viewed Dallas as this haven of just green grass and trees and playing outside. That was really a lot of my childhood. And so the landscapes I've created sort of capture that. And then like photographing my cousins playing in the yard, their little ones, and remind me of that time. So that's the idea behind the project. But sort of the piece that I've been trying to figure out now is capturing that transition as well. So it is about that time, but it's also about aging and now being an adult. And I'm in my late 20s. So 20s are a strange time, just figuring it out and learning how to be an adult and how to navigate the world and deal with stressors and things on your own and struggling and learning that it's okay to struggle, but also having really terrible days and having issues with mental health. Like myself, I struggle with anxiety and depression, and so obviously I don't view Dallas the same way I used to. I can still have those moments of joy, but it's not the same as being a little kid. So trying to capture that as well. So that's kind of been the journey that the story has taken. And since it's a work in progress, the photos don't completely capture that at this point, I don't think, but I think I'll just continue shooting for a couple of more years and hope to get there. But it's been fun to work on so far. And I think there are some photos in there that are capturing that. It's just going to be whittling it down and then shooting more and so on.
Have you had any suggestions that were particularly useful or insightful from the reviewers?
Yes. I feel like a lot of what I just said kind of came out of this week.
All right, yeah. Probably wouldn't have said this like 4 or 5 days ago.
Right. So, yeah, a lot of the reviewers gave some really helpful feedback. I think like being affirmed and encouraged in what you're working on is helpful too, just to be like, okay, I'm not like just doing nothing out here. Like I'm making something that is worthwhile and resonates, but needs work. And so someone said to me, like they said, where is the tension in this? They were searching for that and having a hard time finding it. And that was a really good catalyst for me to start thinking more about what I was just saying about trying to capture the adulthood and the difficulties rather than just like this little haven that used to be, that is childhood. So tension and bringing that up was really helpful. And then earlier today, I was meeting with someone who was just talking about leaning into instinct and not overthinking it. That was helpful. And sequencing. So he had me like go through the images and just kind of make different stacks instinctively based off of like the type of imaging I was doing, essentially. So like different feelings. And then he said, you should go through those stacks and sequence them and see what comes out. And so just thinking about the project in a way that I really hadn't, thinking about sequencing, that it, something that I really haven't done much is thinking about sequencing and how that brings a message. Of course it does, but I've really just thought so much about the individual photo up until this point. So
that comment about tension, what did you sort of take that to mean?
I think it is kind of ambiguous, so I feel like it maybe had several meanings and I maybe don't understand totally all of them. So I get the question. I think
because I'm like, for my own purposes, I genuinely want to understand myself, because I think people throw these things around as if they're just fucking obvious to anyone what they'd mean, and I'm like, wait, you know. So anyway, sorry I interrupted, Hunter, carry on.
I definitely know what you mean. I think from the more literal perspective, I think he was searching for the tension of like childhood versus adulthood seemed to be kind of what he was talking about. So, and it's tough because you get all these different reviewers. So everyone's saying something different, and art is subjective. So you know, someone could look through this and see the tension, but he didn't, and that's fine and, like, helpful for me to hear. So I think probably, you know, like, for it's a podcast, so, like, someone who's listening wouldn't be able to see, but, like a photo of a tree that I'm looking at, like, it's definitely, like, tonally dark, and there's some, you know, anyone can extract whatever meaning they want from it. So someone could look at this image and see tension, but someone else could look at it and see, oh, well, you know, it's a beautiful tree and it signifies peace.
Yeah, and the tension is also, like, from one image to the other, or between one right. image and another, rather than within the actual image, yeah.
Right, yeah.
Hello, I'm Erin Springer, and I'm from a small town in northern Wisconsin.
Okay. What's it called? You going to give it a name?
Sure. It's Menominee is where I'm based now.
Menominee. What a beautiful name for a place. So now, Erin, you won the... You're an alumni. You were at the virtual event 1 year ago, the one that went remote because of COVID. And so you... with a person that year who won the publishing prize. So congratulations. Tell me the project that you won that prize for.
Thank you so much. Well, I showed two bodies of work last year, but the one that's more towards resolution is a body of work called Dormant Seasons. And it's about, it's really a look at my community in northern Wisconsin that I left when I was 18 and I came back to kind of work on this work. And it started sort of as a byproduct of me interacting with my family and my friends there. So it took place mostly during the hunting season and the whitetail season in November. And so that's where a lot of this, the setting takes place, is in these sort of dormant periods of the landscape. But since then, since I first started shooting it, you know, it wasn't really a project when I started. It was just my way of interacting with my brother and my family members who were hunting at that time. But it has since branched out to sort of be a broader look at the cycles of life and sort of the spirituality and the connection between the people and the landscape.
So now, tell me about the process that you've been through in the past year then with working on towards the book with Jesse. I'm really interested in, you know, that process and how that's kind of helped with you, I guess, continuing to shoot. And I presume you're getting kind of drip-fed, you know, feedback from him or advice or whatever. Just talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so kind of, you know, after I'd shown this work, the sort of consensus was that it would benefit from, you know, more time and more investment in looking at things in a different way besides just in the hunting season, you know. So I went back home and, you know, for about 3 to 4 months, I think it was about 4 months total, I pretty much exclusively was, you know, sometimes I do editorial work and things, so I try to kind of trim off any distractions that I usually might have. And I just focused on this to incorporate just a deeper sense of what this place is and sort of what I'm looking at there. And I'm looking at, you know, a lot of different things, and in a lot of ways I'm kind of still processing what it actually is and is about, because it's a very tonal piece. But I think it's me looking at a place that I left sort of through inside outsider eyes, and really reconnecting with those roots, because my family's from the same area, the same prairie of Wisconsin since the 1850s. And so just a few of us, you know, have moved out and left that area. So there's this deep connection to the place, yet I feel like I still have this sort of like removed perspective. So coming back and just being a little bit more broad with how I looked at it and not so narrative specific or not so, I guess, yeah, just not so specific about what I was trying to shoot and photograph really helped and benefited the project so far.
Well, it's Friday night already. The week is passing extremely quickly, I have to say. and another full day of reviews is over, and dinner is now over, and I am heading off to the second night of peer reviews in the conference centre, where most of the events and where the reviews happen. Had dinner. Well, I wish you guys could listen to some of the conversations and some of the discussions that I'm party to. It's such a complete pleasure to be sitting at tables with these people, some of the smartest and funniest and most knowledgeable people you could possibly begin to imagine. And that's such a kind of privilege for me to be sitting with those people. I feel like a total imposter, and in some ways I am, but there you go. Start a podcast and just do it consistently and with commitment for about 5 or 6 years, and you too could put yourself in such a position, I suppose. But wow, it's such a joy, and I wish I had the mic on and was able to record some of the exchanges that I've had with people. But of course, as soon as you start recording things, everything changes, and people will inevitably clam up. There was a hilarious conversation earlier about NFTs, which I wish I could have been able to record. But anyway, what I will record is some of the stuff that now is going to be happening in the peer review. So let's see what's going on in here, and let's try and talk to a few of the attendees about their work. Caroline, do you want to have a little chat with me?
Okay, sure.
This is Caroline Sussman from South Africa. Tell me a little bit about what your work is about, and maybe you can kind of give us a little context.
So I've got three projects here. The one is a 20-year book project on land ownership and violence in South Africa. And then the second one is a body of work that marks 25 years of democracy in South Africa. It's shot in the underpasses of the city, largely. And it just reflects on some themes of like security, faith, adaption, aspiration. The David Goldblatt, famous South African photographer, said color was too sweet for apartheid. So he shot in black and white. So I've kind of taken color to its kind of saturated maximum, and working with design and kind of conflating the two. But really the focus is on the people of Johannesburg, the kind of grit and grace going about their everyday business.
You had a very interesting review from Jesse, and I just wondered what it was that he said, because I know it had a powerful effect on you, and I think it's a great indication of the kind of thing that can happen here. So I just was really curious to know, you know, what he said and what impact it had on you.
So yeah, it was an amazing moment actually. Jesse, he basically said that you want to control the body of work. And you kind of place the pictures as you think they should be, but actually they have a life and a spirit of their own. And when you let that spirit speak, then the magic happens. So the minute you meet with him, he says, "I'm going to rearrange all your work," and he does. And then he actually mixed two bodies of work together, which is kind of crazy, but it was fabulous. And it really was like a lightning bolt, because it also, kind of gives one the confidence to go with your gut feeling and don't try and control the narrative too much. So it was spectacular. Really, really amazing. Thank you, Jesse.
Lloyd, tell me what this work is about that you brought to show people.
So this story is about growing up with my mom, who is deaf, and she did not sign, she only read lips, and she wasn't really quite good at it, and when she was done with either what she tried to say, she would turn away, and when she turned away, I was gone, I was alone, I was in silence, and often feeling anxious because I couldn't express myself to her. And so this work is shows that feeling of silence and anxiety. And I use archival imagery and new imagery. And I have a zine that I created called Silences, but I am planning on taking this work and turning it into a book, because I feel very often many of us in our lives have felt disregarded and not heard. So I think the feeling is somewhat universal, and this is just my way of expressing it.
How come she never learned to sign?
Her mom and dad didn't want her to look like a deaf person. So what they would do is, when somebody was talking to her, they would just tap her on the shoulder and she would know to look at the mouth that was moving.
Oh my God, and where was your dad in all this?
My dad was a businessman, inventor, and he traveled and wasn't really that interested in me. He was interested in my brother, and so he didn't help much with this.
I see. And so, yeah, I can imagine that was a very isolating thing for you. And yeah, what kind of feedback have you had from the reviewers so far on this?
They want more.
Oh, yeah, that's good. That's encouraging.
Yeah, and they understand it, and they do agree that the story is somewhat universal, though it's unique in terms of the fact that my mother read lips. But and maybe especially for women who've been disregarded and not heard for many of the things that they do and what they care about. And so this is just a little piece of that. And so, yeah, I've been very thrilled with the reviews. I'm honored to be here and to have people look at my work and to pick out their favorite prints, even though everybody picked out different stuff.
No, I love that. Well, I'm fascinated by that, kind of the fact that it's a kind of metaphor for women not being heard. This is something my partner talks about quite a lot, so, you know, it's familiar to me. But, yeah, kind of expand on it a little bit. I'd really like to hear you say more about it.
Well, I mean, you know, I don't know how many times I've been in a room when it was in the business world, and I couldn't even get called on to speak. Or if I did speak, I was spoken over. Or, I hate the term, but mansplained. You know, they would explain to me, like, I don't need to be explained to. I can speak for myself. There's just a zillion different times where a woman just truly, her voice cannot get heard. And even if she's the expert, somebody has to recreate what she's saying, because it's he who thinks he says it or feels about it or speaks about it better. And my goal has always been, since I grew up in this world, and not just by men, but by my mom, who didn't hear me, to try and find my way through it, to speak what I needed to say and repeat myself often, because I had to with my mom. And I ended up using that same tactic in my life forever to get to be heard.
My name is Kyle Macrower.
Kyle, hiya. Nice to see you, man. Tell me a little bit about the work you brought.
Well, the work that I brought, the original concept was me and my partner moving out of New York City and moving in with my parents in suburban Philadelphia. And it was overall about getting to relearn my parents and the area that I grew up in. But as this review has progressed, it's now turned to the overarching theme of home. Okay. Wherever it is you may have grown up, wherever you're accepted, wherever you are worldwide, whether it's somewhere you're going to land or somewhere that you're just taken in.
That sounds like you've kind of been led to reconsider the whole kind of nature of the project. Is that what's happened fundamentally?
Yeah, fundamentally, I felt that it got a little constricted by just a specific narrative, and I wanted to make this more ambiguous.
Another person I want to talk to.
Still your gaze.
Chanel.
Yes.
Is that how I say your name?
Chanel, yes.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to hear a little bit more about the work that you brought.
So my work deals with the Black body's connection to the natural world, with specific emphasis on the American landscape, be it urban or rural landscapes and environments. So the work has started in LA, went to Oakland, Brooklyn, and now it's taking a departure to go to the American South, specifically Mississippi, Louisiana, and Georgia, Tennessee, just making my way through. I'm tracing my family history in the land. Being a Black American, that history is obfuscated, it's lost, but I was able to collect these oral histories from my grandmothers about where they're from, and now this is me returning there to try to figure out where do I belong in the landscape.
It may be time for a dip in hot springs at this stage before I fall over. What's always awesome to me is that these people's capacity to talk about and look at photography pretty much all day. And when I say these people, I'm talking about the attendees and the reviewers alike and the speakers. It's a beautiful thing to see the level of enthusiasm and, you know, just the sort of sheer joy of reveling in this kind of mutual love of photography. Saturday already, believe it or not. The week has gone incredibly quickly. It's the final day of reviews today. And after that, there'll be some beers drunk, I imagine. But one more day of reviews, and for me, speaking to the attendees and hearing from some of them and seeing more of their work. So looking forward to doing that. And then everyone can just decompress. And I imagine there'll be a little bit of partying going on. Certainly be one more visit to the hot springs, or perhaps one tomorrow as well. Sunday is a kind of departure day. Everyone will be wandering off back to the airport or back into their cars. So I get on an aeroplane tomorrow afternoon. And so Brian Schutmatt's going to do his presentation this morning in the conference centre. Looking forward to that. And after that, as I say, I'll be back hearing from and seeing the work of more of the attendees.
My name's Jessica Hayes. I am from Bozeman, Montana, but I currently live in Chicago. So I'm currently in an MFA program at Columbia College in Chicago. I also work at the Museum of Contemporary Photography as a curatorial assistant, and then I am a teaching assistant as well. I've been working on a project that is about wildfires in the American West. It was sparked by or the project was inspired and my drive to make the project was sparked by a wildfire in Bozeman, where I'm from, that I could, like, see from my house, and just that whole experience. And I'm interested not only in the ecological devastation that these wildfires and these, like, climate-driven fires mean, but also the collective trauma that communities go through as we're, like, checking for updates and watching things burn down and experiencing very, very strange weather and hotter weather and more fires and lower snowpack.
My name is Isaiah Winters, and I'm from Brooklyn, New York. So the project is kind of about me coming to terms with not really being able to experience the national parks and the outdoors as much when I was a child. You know, I kind of, family's from Brooklyn, grew up on the East Coast, and after I graduated from college, undergrad, I went and served in the U.S. Air Force for 6 years. Wow. And when I got out, kind of one of the things that you get for your time in service is a all-access park pass. So, you know, as a way to try to heal, you know, I started traveling to all these national parks. Glacier National Park up north was the first one that I went to. And, you know, I really just, being someone who was big into the history, started digging into the creation of that park, the acquisition of the lands, and kind of, you know, trying to find my place within all of it and what it means and, you know, reconcile with some of this history that I'm now able to, you know, benefit from.
Mm. So did the themes that you have ended up kind of working with sort of emerge in the process, as it were, of doing this story?
Absolutely, I would say so. It was one of those things where, like, I started to feel, you know, this sense of peace, but then also feeling a little unwelcome and confused about those conflicting feelings. And, you know, as I've returned back home to the East and I've been spending a lot of time with my grandmother, you know, she's getting up there in age, and driving around with her, going to doctor's appointments and things like that, and seeing her say, you know, this land is completely unrecognizable. These landmarks, all these things that I remember kind of don't exist anymore. So it all kind of came from this idea of invisibility and kind of what's unseen or unspoken about. And just after that, I couldn't stop. I've been traveling to as many parks as I could, you know, get to and digging in. I'm finishing up my MFA right now up at Parsons, and we have feedback and things like that, but I really wanted to be around other people who are kind of working on these long form projects and understand the journey of trying to sort through all this research and all these images and these kind of dense ideas and thoughts. And it's been extremely helpful to me. You know, I wanted to come and hear from the reviewers, but mostly I wanted to build out a network, you know, and meet other people that I could kind of reach out to in the future once I start, you know, developing the sequences a bit and getting more into the, you know, the history. And I feel great about it. I'm really excited that I'm here, and I've kind of already been bugging Katie and Jesse to like, okay, how's the alumni program work? You know, how do I come back? Because yeah, it's just been incredibly helpful. I felt like when I came in, I had maybe three or four directions that I was being pulled in. And, you know, today's the last day. I really feel like, you know, when I go home, I'm excited. I'm excited to kind of start making my little 4x6 prints and sorting through it all over again and testing things out, you know.
My name is Hannah Kivaranta, and I'm from Toronto, Canada. So over the last 3 or so years, I documented my journey with a chronic illness. I was diagnosed with endometriosis at the very end of 2020. So my journey from when I documented it was probably about 2018 to the end of 2021. Because it is a gynecological disease, it is misrepresented, misunderstood, misdiagnosed, underfunded. It's taboo, so it's really difficult for people to talk about, really hard to find treatment, proper treatment options for people that, you know, work.
Now, how does one go about doing a photo project on such a thing?
Honestly, it's so difficult because it is an invisible illness for most people. Like, my journey only started to take a physical form when I started to get like severe swelling in my abdomen, which I first started photographing. And then around that time, I also didn't realize that I was giving myself radiation burns from overusing my heating pad. So that is also kind of like a signature telltale sign that people have some kind of pelvic pain, is they get these like scarring and burns on their abdomen from overusing that. But other than that, it is an invisible illness. So a lot of it is very psychological. Honestly, the feedback's been really wonderful, and it kind of brings me back to like the root and the beginning of why I started documenting this, was not just taking very like literary documentation of my journey, but also kind of like the more allegorical, like metaphorical images, which is kind of what I relate to more. So the feedback that I'm getting is I can remove some of the really cliche images that I just kind of threw in there to tell the story, because I've been told the images are impactful enough that I don't need to be as literal with them, which has been really, really nice to hear.
What were Pradeep's comments?
He told me it was perfect. He told me he didn't like the title, to change the title of the project, but he said otherwise it was perfect.
That's about as good as it gets, isn't it? I mean, that must have been very gratifying.
It was lovely.
I mean, it's incredibly raw to do such a personal thing. Like, I mean, there's this picture we're looking at right now, your naked body, and I'm wondering, did you have to kind of sort of psych yourself up to get to the point where it was like you were comfortable with a complete stranger like me sitting here looking at a picture like that, or was that, does that come relatively naturally to you? I'm always curious about self-portraiture where there's nudity involved and that kind of thing, and in this case it's not just that, it's more about, you know, like, as you say, depicting the physical kind of a manifestation of the problem.
This does not come naturally to me in any form whatsoever. I initially started even taking the picture just because I was trying to document how swollen my abdomen was, but the thing that came across in the images was how dark my scarring was, which is kind of what I stuck with for the photo. But I even when I was putting this series together, the first person to look at it was my husband, and I only showed him about a week before I put it on my website. Like, I was so secretive about this, I guess also because it's so personal, and I didn't want any outside like judgment or anything to cloud my perception of my work. But also it is like my body, my personal journey, which is, it's just like too many things mixed up into one, which can be tricky.
So my name is Debbie Arluck, and I live in Santa Monica, California. I am from New Jersey. Well, I bought three, but the one that brought me here is my first documentary, and it's called 1-1000, and that references how long seizures last. And this is it's a love story, actually, between my sister and my nephew and I, and tomorrow, actually, he'll be 28. The images were taken during a one-month time period. They live in Colorado. I was visiting. It was the first summer of the pandemic, and that allowed me to stay there for so long. Normally, I wouldn't had a long visit. And I have the camera around me, as I do, documenting here and there, and I get this message that says, you're meant to take a photo, to make a project of your sister and your nephew. And immediately I got this, yes, but how? Because I don't do documentary. I've done, you know, surreal work, landscape, conceptual work, but I knew I had to do it. My sister is a single parent. She's got three boys, all grown. David, at the age of two, was diagnosed with a severe brain disorder, an epileptic disorder. Then years later, we found out that he has severe autism and he had developed scoliosis. So David's nonverbal. We don't know what he thinks. His communication is limited in terms of, you know, turning away if there's something he doesn't want. There's some eye contact, but it's not strong. When he was little, he would look up into the lights, and he would stare at the light like there was something in the lights, and I would think, where do you go? Where are you? So this project is the love story, you know, between the three of us, but as Lori, as a mom, how she cares for her son, and David, who's dependent and loves his mom. And so it's how to show this idea, you know, bringing out the awareness. It's called Lennox-Gastaut syndrome, and bringing awareness so hopefully we can raise money to find a cure. Wouldn't that be magnificent? But also there are so many people around the world that are caring. They're, you know, long-term caregivers, and they're caring for somebody in their family, whether it's somebody younger, their mate, or is it a parent dealing with Alzheimer's. So it kind of has no boundary, really. Yeah.
So who was it who suggested that you should do it then, Debbie?
A message that came to my head. It was a higher message, I would say. My spirit, my soul, I don't know.
Okay, interesting. But as you say, you don't see yourself as a documentary photographer particularly. Was this your first foray into this kind of narrative kind of approach?
Yeah, absolutely. And so I actually call it pop doc, which is pop art and documentary that I mix together. I use color in dissonant places to sort of, for several reasons. One, I do it in a redactive way. I'll get to those images to sort of, and then we can kind of go around. Where I'm doing a silhouette, and there are two specifically with the ones that I brought. So it's sort of removing the identity, but there's the presence that is always looming, and sort of that energy that is there.
My name is Malika Ali Harding. I am an American currently based in Amsterdam, the Netherlands.
What took you there?
Oh, that's a lot. There are many different reasons. It was time to leave America. I called it my Blaxit, like Brexit. It felt like the Netherlands had solved a lot of the social issues that we're still struggling with in the United States. And I wanted to sort of experience that culture and see how they solve a lot of those problems, like mass incarceration. Most of my family has been incarcerated at some point in their lives, how they have a multicultural, multiracial society, but don't have as much of the, you know, the violence and the problems that the United States has.
Was this a place that you'd already visited before you decided to go and live there then, or was it just a like, yeah, let's try it?
Initially, it was just a layover. I only had a layover in Amsterdam, and there were cardboard cutouts of Dutch canal houses, and I felt like they were speaking to me and beckoning me there. Then I went home and did a bunch of research and looked at a bunch of different cities around the world, and we came back around to Amsterdam.
Tell me about the project that you've kind of brought to show people, if there is, I presume it's like one particular thing that you're interested in getting feedback on this week, or maybe one body of work. Just kind of just introduce it to me and explain what it's about.
Sure. The project is called Unreliable Narrators, and it is I'm looking at the generation that came before me and the different historical movements that their lives represent. So this first book looks at the gay liberation movement in America, but told through the perspective of a black working class male, and I'm portraying my uncle David's life through two weddings and a funeral that take place from 1973 to 1993.
Talk to me a little bit about some of the feedback that you've had from the reviewers. I'm just interested to hear, you know, maybe a few kind of examples of things that have struck you as particularly interesting, or something that maybe, you know, you can go away with not having thought about before. Any examples come to mind of things that have been said to you about the work?
Well, what's been incredible is that every single person has had something different to say in a way that both expands the project and helps me think about it more deeply. But I think the consensus has been that it is very strange, but in a way that makes sense. Yeah.
Okay, very strange, but in a way that makes sense. I like that. I like that. Yeah, I think it would be futile for me to try and give a sense of what it's about, but it's definitely, have a look, folks, because it's great. Thanks so much, Malika, for telling me how about the work and for talking with me.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.